Bible teacher Ray Vanderlaan was in studio recently with Focus President Jim Daly and me, and in the conversation, Ray addressed sexual immorality in the culture. He pointed to the example of the Apostle Paul's ministry in the decadent ancient city of Corinth in Greece, and here's how Jim set up that conversation.
Ray, perhaps the final question, given the extra time here. When you look at the culture today, especially in the context of Corinth, when you talk about sexual debauchery, and we see the expanse of sexual expression in the culture today and the acceptance of it, whether that's same-sex marriage, all of the alphabet of LGBTQQ++ that they use now, and they identify with that. This is who I am. And mm-hmm. I've talked to former lesbians, former gay men who are now Christians who talk about that identity being deeper than anything else they had. It's their sexual expression is their identity. It's not who they're made in the image of God. That's not their identity until they have that revelation. How do we address that in our culture today with the wisdom, the skill that Paul seemed to have when he talked in Romans, in the book of Romans? Mm-hmm. And how do we find that ability again?
You know, that's, again, one of those very, very intense questions which must be debated, discussed, and wrestled with. Let me stick to what Paul did in Corinth in this case, since that's where my mind has been here. What Paul strives to create is a model of what godliness looks like sexually.
Right.
And I think somehow that has to be a fundamental part of the message we proclaim to our own culture. It can't simply be what we're telling them. It's got to be what we're showing them.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why I've been so blessed being partner with Focus on the Family in a small way, because you are creating or helping us to create a model of what godly marriage and sexuality looks like.
Yeah.
And the better that model, the easier it will be to make our case for what is godly and what isn't. You know, in the middle of his discussion about marriage and purity and holiness, he's got that two-chapter piece of meat sacrifice to idols. Where in the world did that come from? Well, here's what Paul is addressing. He says, meat sacrificed to idols, and he uses a word that refers to an animal that's been offered to a god, mm-hmm. and if it's sold in the market, eat it. He says an idol is nothing. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Enjoy the steak. It's all yours. But then later he says, but if you're offered idol temple meat, sacrificed meat, and now he uses the word that means temple meat. We translate them both as meat sacrificed to idols. They are. But the second kind is meat that's eaten in the temple in front of the idol. Now, typically, when that was done, it was done in a feast. We took people to the island of Delos, where I found a little temple to Serapis that still had one of those dining halls. And you would lay on a triclinial style, which means three-sided. You would gorge yourself on the meat of the sacrifice. You would drink until intoxicated. Then the women and children would often be excused, and the entertainers would come in. Hetera, they were called. Trained women or men or boys, often with skills like juggling or poetry or flute playing or something else. And there would be this lengthy, debauched orgy in that place. Now, it seems to me what Paul is trying to do with the meat sacrificed to idols is not set up a food code. What Paul's trying to do is to say, I've got to keep you out of those temple feasts.
Right.
You have to be a living example. Now, the council will decide that Gentiles have to follow three rules. No meat that's strangled, which the Jews claimed that pagans did because it wasn't killed kosher. No meat sacrificed or eaten in front of idols. And no sexual immorality. The only place those three things come together is in the temple feast.
Interesting.
So I think Paul is saying you have to live an alternative. You have to live out a godly model of sexuality. And you have to avoid putting yourself in the position where you become part of the debauched behavior of your own community.
Yeah. Do you think in that context, the reason Christians drew people, the pagans, toward them is because they realized how empty it was.
Especially women. You know, there's this whole phenomenon in the New Testament of what are called God-fearers. God-fearers were Gentiles who were drawn to the Jewish faith, but weren't ready to take on the whole kosher law, how to cut your hair, don't work on the Sabbath. But they believed in the God of Israel. They renounced their gods. The Jews had a huge debate. What do we do with these guys? Some of the more traditionalists said, well, they've got to convert. Others said, no, let them be God-fearers. Let them be Gentiles. They'll renounce their pagan gods. They'll serve the God of Israel, but they don't have to take all these Jewish laws. Same argument the early church had. In fact, I think it got into the early church as Jews believed in Jesus. Some came from one of those ideas, one of those thought patterns, and some from the other. But these God-fearers were drawn to the Jewish synagogue. And it was primarily, notice how often in the New Testament, Paul talks about there were Jews in the synagogue and God-fearing women.
Huh, yeah.
God-fearing women are Gentiles. Why were women drawn? Well, because of the gross immorality that was widely practiced, especially by males, in their world. It had to be empty. They had to have this inner sense, because they were image of God, that this wasn't how life should be lived. Men weren't drawn as much, maybe in part because they were a part of a male culture, but I think in part because if they were drawn, they probably would have been encouraged to be circumcised, and that's not a great evangelistic
approach. But you think of this, Ray. You look at the culture today. You talk about relevance of Scripture. Look at what's happening with the mistreatment of women, the mm-hmm. Weinstein yeah. situation,
exactly.
how it's impacting the #MeToo right. movement. This is a moment.
So why were women drawn to the Jewish God? And the answer is because they saw a model in the Jewish community that was different than what they saw when they went to the pagan community. It wasn't the preaching that drew them. It was the way these Jews were living.
They felt respected.
And almost every synagogue Paul went to, there are already Gentiles there. People miss, I missed, how God is preparing for the gospel. He's got all these Gentiles in every Jewish synagogue in the world who already are committed to the God of Israel. Now they just need to know the Messiah has come. Think of how much closer they were to faith in Jesus than if they were still a worshiper of Zeus or Mars or whoever.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It made more sense to them.
Right, but they were drawn to the way the Jews lived.
Man.
That's that Ruth story. You know, tell me that Ruth's mother-in-law and father-in-law and Ruth's husband weren't living a godly life. If they hadn't been, there's no way Ruth would have left her culture and her religion, and her family.
Yeah,
she had to have seen it in action.
Well, and again, this is the wisdom that you gain out of the set. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about
so
all
here.
Of it, 1 through 16.
that the 95 episodes. 95. Can you believe this?
This will keep you busy. This is binge watching at its best. Yeah. But Ray, again, thank you for the extra time. It's so enlightening and so thought-provoking. And man, I just hope millions of people come into contact with this content, because it's God-inspired. Thank you.
Bless God. Thank you. It's an honor.